This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today we're here to talk about death and dead people. Is that right? And first of all, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourselves, gentlemen. You are?
My name's Andrew Purvis.
And what do you do, Andrew?
So I work for William Purvis Funeral Directors, and I am one of the funeral directors here.
Sounds like that's a family firm.
It is. It's been going for five generations now.
So you're the fifth.
I am.
Well, you're a bit. Keep it going then, I suppose. And the other gentleman here with us is Tom.
Tom Gordon, former chaplain at the Marie Curie Hospice and co-lead of the bereavement support team there. And now I facilitate the ACORN's bereavement programmes, which is, although it's a standalone set of programmes, it's under William Purvis's guidance and support.
And I understand that you brought that in, Tom. I mean, I know that, you know, having you're the fifth generation, Andrew, this is you've had a lot of experience in dealing with people who are grieving after death or dealing with the practicalities of all of that. But Tom, you brought something new in then. Tell us a little bit about ACORNS and how that works.
As the company expanded with more and more people going through their hands, there was a concern that they had nowhere that they could refer people on to. There's plenty of good agencies who do support, but there wasn't anything short life, a starter for 10, Weight Watchers for the bereaved, whatever you want to call it, where people could come together, learn from each other with a guiding hand and with good professional input.
So is it really just a way of sharing their experiences and perhaps realising that they're not alone?
Yes, it's absolutely right, and it's a way of normalising their reactions to loss when they don't have anyone else, even within families, to speak with, but also with some guided conversation. Conversations are fine of themselves, but with good professionally trained people in different aspects of loss, we can help guide those conversations.
And do you find that a lot of your clients here, Andrew, are actually taking advantage of that kind of service?
Yeah, so there's a... It's not a huge percentage of people, but it's something that we offer to all of our clients. We make available to all of our clients, and some of them feel that it's not for them, and that's fine. Others feel that it is something that they would like to attend. It's something that we offer not just to our own clients, though. We make it available to anybody, and we get a number of referrals from doctor's surgeries, from churches. Tom would actually be able to tell us more about where we get all our referrals from.
The percentage varies from programme. We run four programmes a year, 6 weeks in duration, each of the programmes.
So I hadn't understood that. So each programme is a six-week programme, and so somebody has to sign up. It's not just a matter of just turning up once and going away then.
We encourage people to let us know if they're coming, and we encourage people to stay for the whole duration of the programme. Each week of the programme has a topic on a particular aspect of loss. And we encourage people, rather than saying, well, I'm interested in cooking for one, or I don't know how to organise my finances, come to the whole programme. Because it's not just about the issues of loss. It's how we build relationships with each other and how we learn from each other. And as one of our resource people says, it's the nods around the group that's just as important as anything anybody says, as people are empathising on a particular aspect.
And are you the only person who leads these kind of groups?
No.
Is it just you?
No. We run four programmes a year. I run two of them, and I have two colleagues, who run the other two. But we also have a team. There's four or five of us as resource people at each programme. And then for each of the topic weeks, we bring in specialists. We have a retired GP, we have a health and nutrition specialist, we have a financial outreach worker from the Citizens Advice Bureau, we have somebody who themselves has been bereaved over the last 8-9 years on several occasions, several different bereavements. So we have resource people who come and help us.
So they must find that very useful, though, and a nice, you know, make it a little easier then to perhaps move forward, I'm sure.
We live in a society that purports to be more open and understanding of these issues. Actually, we don't. And in bereavement, people are closed down, and sometimes they feel shut off. So, as Andrew was saying earlier, the majority of people will cope. They don't need any input or any environment in which to explore things. But for the people who do, it takes them out of that isolation and checks out the normality of how they're feeling and how they're coping. And bizarrely, rather than everybody disappearing into a black hole of depression as we talk about death, you get flashes of light as somebody's, yeah, that's the way I feel too. And so it goes on from there.
So, first of all, sadly, somebody has to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then your services then begin. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's when the grieving process actually can start. But you want people to think of that a wee bit further ahead rather than
absolutely
coming to you once a death has occurred. So
absolutely.
Tell us what you would really like people to do.
So we are a big advocate for people actually having conversations before the time of need. And I've met with many families who suddenly are put in this difficult situation, a terrible situation, and they've got so many things to think about, and I'm asking them really hard questions. And they're trying to plan and think what their loved one would have wanted for a funeral. But they've got no idea, because either they didn't want to have the conversation or they just didn't think about having that conversation. And so we would say to people, have those conversations. It's a difficult thing to start. It's a difficult thing to bring up. But have those conversations. And if you can't have those conversations with your family, come and have the conversation with us. We do that free of charge, and we keep on record what the person wants to have.
That must seem a little peculiar coming along to your beautiful offices, by the way. But you know, without the need, the immediate need of your services.
I think it can be. I think it can seem slightly strange for the person themselves doing that. And as a funeral director, when I first started doing that, it was slightly strange for me because I was used to dealing with the families and not necessarily with the person that whose funeral it was going to be. But once you get over that, I think it takes 5 or 10 minutes to get over that fact. I think it can actually be a huge relief, a release, because then you have notes and you have plans of what's going to happen for your funeral. And I think for some people, they then walk out of here, and I would say that they don't always have to come to our office. We go and see people at home as well. But they then have a plan, and they know that they're not going to have that burden for their family, that it's going to their wishes are going to be carried out.
So that's just things like music, readings, whether they have a horse and carriage or one of your
horses.
Yeah,
so it's every single detail. And for some people, I've sat with them and I've planned every little detail. So I've written out a new notice for the newspaper, and all we have to do is fill in the day and the time of when the funeral is going to be. We've planned who's going to carry the coffin, and I've written out every single detail. Other people don't want to go into that detail. They just want to say, this is the basic outline, and you know, the rest can be sorted out later.
Do you think that somebody, you know, to be in of a mind to do that kind of thing, either they have to be very organised, or is that something you would more often do with somebody who's perhaps having a terminal illness?
I think that can be one of the triggers for it, if somebody's been diagnosed with a terminal illness, but I don't think it has to be like that. I think these are conversations that we would encourage people to have anyway.
And to follow that, when people who haven't had that opportunity prior to death come to our bereavement support groups, what it does for them is it opens up the possibility of them having conversations with other people. So they're learning, they're facing mortality, and therefore saying, what do I need to do about this? And sometimes it's back with the company, and at other times it's simply having those conversations with people that matter,
mm-hmm.
Having learned from the lack of that in advance. And that's very, it just opens people up to new possibilities.
And just writing it down even. So, Andrew, are you able to tell us then what's the most detailed, most unusual, most anything kind of funeral that you've been asked to organise? Is there anything that you could tell us?
I think each funeral is unique and individual. And what some people think is detailed and strange is not necessarily what anybody else would. But we've arranged funerals where we've had a motorcycle hearse, a motorbike hearse. We've arranged horse-drawn hearses. But even just particular choices of music for some people, At the crematorium. So although it's not perhaps strange, it's the detailed part, and it's the part that that person really, really wanted.
And have you organised your own? See, it's always cobbler's kids who are worst shot, yeah. Is that not right?
So I've got ideas about what I'd like for my own funeral, and I think I've
Would
shared...
Would you like someone to write them down
yeah,
for you?
I've shared enough with my colleagues and certainly with my wife. For them to know exactly what would happen when it was my turn.
Andrew's talking about the uniqueness of a funeral and the planning of that. Bereavement is also unique to the individual, and sometimes the reaction to loss won't fit other people's expectations. And one of the things that really matters in bereavement is that people take ownership of their own approach to loss. So that if you are not able to put your wife's clothes out, even although your daughter thinks there must be something wrong with you because you still have them in the wardrobe, but when you talk with somebody, the clothes being in the wardrobe give them comfort. And actually, and as on one occasion, a bereaved husband said, I take my wife's blouse off the hanger and I smell her perfume. That's what matters to him. Not whether his daughter thinks he's stuck because he hasn't got the clothes to the charity shop yet. So if we can help people take ownership of the planning of the funeral, so we can help them take ownership of the grief journey and find that in what may to other people seem slightly odd, actually matters as somebody's processing their own response to loss.
And Tom, you've written, I understand, books on this subject.
Yes, I wrote a book not long after I left the hospice and based on the work I was doing with ACORNS, telling stories about people's response to different aspects of loss. And I have another book with the publisher at the moment, which is due out next year on the same theme with more stories. And the more that people are able to share their story, whether in a small group or through me as a writer, to help people out there say, oh, that's interesting, because that's exactly how I feel too, the better it is all round.
I think that's one of the things that I love about ACORNS, the bereavement support, is that two people can sit next to each other and on the face of it, they've got absolutely nothing in common. But the one thing they have in common is they've been through a bereavement, and so they understand that part of their lives. But they may be years apart in age, and they may be completely different. The circumstances of the bereavement may be completely different, but they have this one thing in common. And when one person says something, the person next to them can say, yeah, I feel like that too. I thought I was the only one.
Yeah. This is really a very caring profession, actually, that you're in.
It
and
is.
I know that you were effectively born into it, but did you have any choice as to go into something else?
Yep, so I went to university and then I worked for a charity as a fundraiser for a couple of years, and then I was asked to come and join the business at that point. So yeah, I did other things and then came here.
But it's interesting that it is a caring profession, and the caring continues into bereavement through ACORNS. But it's also a privilege to be alongside people
Absolutely.
At the most difficult of times. Not because you want to do your job well, and to do it to a high professional standard, but because you see the difference it makes to the people that you're working with. They're being assisted through a difficult time. It's immensely satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, people very much hope that they don't need to use your services too soon and or too quickly. But I know that you are here for them. Have you got anything on your website which people could look up and get some more information?
Absolutely. So we have resources on our website. We have information to help people plan their own funeral and have conversations. These are all free things to download that people can look at. A plan of wishes is what it's called. And there's other information as well to help people plan and arrange funerals.
And where is your website?
So our website is at williampurvis.co.uk.
Great. And where can people find you, Tom? Where's ACORNS?
They'll find it through the website. And we also have an email address, acorns.info@gmail.com. And there's also a phone number in one of the branch offices that people can be in touch with them. And if there's any issues that people want to explore, they come directly to me as the coordinator of the programmes. And I can have conversations with people by email, people I've never met, and people who may even decide not to come to a programme, but that little gentle reassurance that actually they're okay works wonders. And these are people that I'm not likely to meet, but just somebody out there who's prepared to listen and at least get alongside.
I should have asked you this at the very beginning, I suppose. Is Acorns, is this service a free service?
It is.
How is that funded?
It's funded by the company. William Purvis do the underpinning financially. But it's free at the point of delivery. And indeed, there are people who will come back for a second programme. So if I've come along to a bereavement support programme, let's say 5 months after my mother's died, there are certain things I need to explore. But 15 months after my mother's died, there are different issues. So we've had people coming back to two and on one occasion a third programme at different stages of their loss. Meet with different people, but the same subject matter, but they're in a different place. But it's absolutely free, and that's one of the good things about giving it away, not just to Purvis clients, but to the wider community. And while there are good agencies out there, this fits a gap that's not there. The 6 week short life starter openness, and it works, and it's a great privilege to be involved.
Great. Well, thank you very much indeed, gentlemen, for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can read the full-length version of this story and, of course, all our other stories online at www.theedinburghreporter.co.uk.